Guess what day it is?
The Steve Cochran Show.
We welcome Governor Mike Pence and Senator Tim Kaine.
Ukraine, or now their heavy-handed approach.
You both have said Vladimir Putin is a better
president. We're going to get to Russia in just a moment.
And paid a few taxes and lost $1 billion a year. You are Donald Trump's apprentice. Let me talk about this
issue
of the state of the world.
Senator, I think I'm still on my time.
Well, I think, isn't this a discussion?
This is our open discussion.
Let's talk about the state of the world.
Let me interrupt you and finish my sentence if I can. While she was Secretary of State.
Okay, now I can weigh in.
She had a private server.
I get to weigh in now. Let me just say this.
I did raise, Senator.
Keep that pay-to-play process
you have an opportunity
Governor
to
Pence,
out of the reach of
Governor
the
Pence,
because Hillary Clinton failed to renegotiate.
More American troops
Hillary Clinton,
in Russia,
Hillary
you can
Clinton,
propose that.
Right. Hillary Clinton failed to renegotiate a status of forces agreement.
No, that is, if you can't meet
the
Nixon standard,
the people at home cannot understand either one of you when you speak over each other. I would please ask you to wait until it is that the other is finished.
Boy, that escalated quickly. I mean, that really got out of hand fast.
Well, well, well. 6:12 in the morning. 6:11, actually. Good morning. Nice job, Jay.
God, I have a headache, and we're only a minute in.
Right.
Anybody got any
aspirin? Normally it takes longer than that.
Right.
Steve Cochran Show number 748, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio at Cochran Show on Twitter, Facebook.com/Steve Cochran Show. I gave up 90 minutes of my life I'll never see again to live tweet the vice presidential debate last night. And I hope you enjoyed that. In the meantime, Tim Kaine is somewhere going, look at me, 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 look at me. No, look at me, look at me, look at me, look at me, look at me. He just could not help himself.
Who knew either had that in them to be that vocal?
I got to say, Pence was the grown-up, even though the BS meter was off the charts because he couldn't defend anything. The one that Kaine did really well, Kaine set him up in a position to defend what Trump has said.
Mm-hmm.
He couldn't do it. He couldn't do it. And frankly, he chose not to do it, which says a lot about the relationship from Pence's point of view. Mm-hmm. I don't know that Trump has said anything about the VP debate beyond his own live tweeting last night, but it'll be interesting to see what his reaction is today.
Oh, of course he's going to go. Mike Pence won the debate.
I don't know. I don't know. I think he'll make it about him. But Pence, by most accounts, won the debate. Draw. I would say maybe even a slight win for Kaine, simply because he put Pence in a position to defend Trump and he couldn't do it. The one thing the VP debate did, which and it was the same thing that happened in 08 and also in 12, is the VP debate changed the conversation and the momentum that had been going on since the first presidential debate. Now we have two more presidential debates. The second one is Sunday night in St. Louis. Mm-hmm. And the VP shot has come and gone. Did anyone sit back and watch those guys last night and go, thank God one of them could be president?
Thank God one of them could?
Yeah. Because Hillary or Trump could, you know, die in 20 minutes.
Oh, my head again.
Or be arrested.
Yeah, or arrested or thrown out of office or whatever the case may be.
By the way, thank you for doing that tweeting because it was just painful to watch.
You're welcome. And it, I don't know, Kaine, I thought Kaine had some really strong points, but he annoyed the hell out of me.
Yeah.
And Elaine Quijano, I'm not quite sure she's ready for primetime. I mean, she just, as the debate moderator, she tried to keep them under control, which is a little hard. Mm-hmm. But secondarily, when one or the other would hang themselves or make a point, she'd change topics. You got to give them a little room to breathe at the end of those so the other person can respond.
Former Illini, by the way. By the way, I did
Elaine
feel...
Keanu?
Elaine, yeah.
Okay.
I did feel that, though, as well. I thought, man, jump in.
I think she could have had a cattle prod and still not been able to separate them, though, at a certain point.
Well, the weird thing is, and this makes the whole Tim Kaine thing even more awkward, they're sitting at a table.
Mm-hmm.
When you're sitting in that close a proximity with two other people and you're that obnoxious, it's a little awkward.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I think Pence came off so much better than he did. Now, I mentioned this last night on Twitter. Pence, to me, looks like the guy that you talk to at a party and then you forget you talk to him the next time you see him. Oh, I met you at that party?
Right.
Oh, you're that guy. And Kane's the guy that tries to sell you more insurance. But the overall takeaway for me for the night was that nothing really changes, and today. We wait for the next obnoxious thing for Trump or the next problem from Hillary. The story yesterday that got buried was President Clinton saying that Obamacare is the craziest thing he's ever seen. We got that sound. We'll play it for you in a little while. But there was a moment in 2012, which I remember like it was yesterday. Remember the convention was in Tampa. Clinton goes out, does the speech introducing President Obama, Bill Clinton, and, you know, blows the roof off the place as always. Just does a tremendous speech.
Yeah.
As he's walking off, President Obama walks on and he goes to give him a bro hug. And Clinton gives him kind of the stiff arm handshake and leans in and says something to him. And I really think I was right then. I think I'm right now when I tell you he leaned in and said, "You're going to pay for this."
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. You will pay back for this. He doesn't like President Obama. Anybody inside Washington has always felt that was the case. People who know say that's the case off the record. So, you know, whether it was just trashing Obama's legacy to some extent, I don't believe it's that he doesn't want Hillary to be president, but a month before the election with Barack Obama and Michelle Obama out as really effective speech makers for Hillary.
Right.
It's probably not the right time for President Clinton to go, "Hey, you know that thing Obama's really proud of? That sucked."
Yeah. It's the craziest thing in the world,
yeah.
He called it.
It's the craziest thing in the world.
They have a weird dynamic, though. You're right. Did you see
they don't like each other.
Did you see the video over the weekend when they were campaigning? Actually, it was two weekends ago when Bill Clinton and Obama were on the same plane together. They were campaigning or they were at the same event. And Clinton was running late and he was shaking hands with the people on the ground. And Obama standing at the top of the stairs at the plane.
Waiting.
Going, Billy. Yeah. And he's rolling his eyes and he's looking at the Secret Service going, "Get that dude on the plane."
Right.
They had this awkward, you know, moment at the top of the stairs. Hey, let's go. Okay.
Yeah. Not a fan. In the meantime, this becomes an automatic commercial for Trump. You know, the fact that President Clinton said this. So it's an awkward day there. And I hope this doesn't affect Hillary and Bill's relationship.
By the way, Trump tweeting, "Mike Pence won big. We should all be proud of Mike."
Yeah, he didn't win big. No. You may have won by a skosh. I felt like Kane may have won by a skosh at the end after sleeping on it. I think, maybe Pence won by a skosh.
I think it was more of a draw. But at least we get to know the candidates a little better.
Yeah, you know.
Somewhat.
Both of them are more likable than the two at the top of the ticket, but not by much. Look at me. Look at me. 6:22, the Steve Cochran Show continues. Later this morning after 9, important announcement. Hope you'll be around to hear about 9:40. Senator Durbin will be in studio after 8 o'clock this morning. Jason DeSanto will be here to talk about the vice presidential debate. He's a senior professor at Northwestern University. Karen Conti on the law shortly. Now one of our friends of the program, Bridget Gaynor, Cook County Commissioner, who is, she's about to be a hero. She's about to get some sick leave passed. Are you going to get this passed?
I think so. We have a good feeling about today.
All right.
So we're good.
All right. Talk to you later.
Good morning. How are you?
Talk to you later. Thanks.
That was easy.
Good segment. I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm great. Great. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, I appreciate you coming on. Always. You're a great guest. But the thing that I think that surprised a lot of people who aren't maybe Cook County residents is that this wasn't already in the mix of things. So explain the background here.
Yeah. So, you know, I think this is a lot about how the economy has changed. Usually when you think you go, you get a job, you have some vacation time, you have some sick time, you can always call in. But the workforce has really changed around us. Most people aren't working at big companies now, and you have people putting together two part-time jobs, and you don't have those protections. So you have people, and not just people who are, you know, driving for Uber or Lyft or working in the gig economy, like they call it.
Yeah.
But, you know, you end up in Cook County, there's 400,000 people who cannot take one day of sick time. And you think about all the people who are raising their kids, taking care of their parents. I mean, look, I have three kids. And you know that often, you know, life isn't really in your total control, and you need a break every once in a while. So that's we're not giving people any margin for error. So this ordinance would just say, look, over the course of a year, you don't just get 5 days, you earn them. You have to work, first of all, you have to work 180 hours even to be eligible, and then you have to work 40 hours even to get 1 hour of sick time. So it allows you to accrue 5 days of earned sick time over the year, and then take them. And so it just is, you know, it's kind of a balance of what is allows people to have a dignified life and recognizes that in the course of a year, you, your kid, your mom, you know, someone might be sick and you might need to take a day off work.
And that's what I like too, Bridget, because family is defined as so many different things these days. You might be caring for an uncle or a grandmother or a stepdaughter, whoever.
You have the
it
whole
might
family
be.
Living with you. Maybe they didn't leave after Thanksgiving last year.
Yeah, so it's not just you, right? This could be a relative, or if you're dealing with a private matter, rehab or something of that, domestic violence.
Yeah. Yes, exactly right. I mean, look, you know, hopefully, fingers crossed, things go well for people, but they, you know, they don't always. And so imagine what it's like to think I have to go for a whole year and not anything can ever go wrong. My kids' school can't close. There can't be a polar vortex. I can't get sick. I mean, that's a lot of pressure.
Yeah, it is.
To put on somebody. So I think that, you know, look, there's now, you know, Joan Murphy passed away a couple weeks ago, who was on the county board with me. So there's 16 members of the county board. And I, you know, we need to get 9 of those guys to vote for this. And I'm confident that we will, because I think at the end of the day, like me, there's several other working parents on that board. And I think you realize that this is fair. It puts skin in the game for everybody. And, you know, I will, you know, put a shout out to the Restaurant Association and the hotel worker, you know, hotel industry. They really stepped up and were huge supporters of this. We worked on it back and forth. Even the Chamber of Commerce, you know, they had a lot of issues. We tried to, you know, we couldn't give them everything they wanted, but, you know, I feel like we found a way to be in the middle. So,
well, and you got to work an entire year to get the 5 days. So it's not like people are coming in and doing the state tap dance where you steal money from the taxpayers by coming back to work for a day. You've got to do a year
exactly
to get the five days.
Exactly right. And so everyone's got some skin in the game. And so look, we need a healthy workforce in the county. That's the end of the day. So
what are you going to do next, Harold?
What am I going to do next? Yeah. Well, you know, I will tell you, just on Saturday, we were out on the west side and we met about 100 local developers, rehabbers, because we're doing a huge project with the land bank. So Arnie Duncan and I are working together to get some of the young people that you really have a hard time getting employed, that group of young men, 16 to 24. And so we're telling people, as we sell them a house for the land bank, we want you to take one of these young people to work for about 6 months. And there wasn't one person in the room who said they wouldn't do it. And so it's kind of like a each one teach one. So that's after we get this done, that's the next focus. So I'm excited.
Do me a favor. If you're ever in a debate, don't do this. Is it my turn to talk? Is it my turn to talk? Is it my turn to talk? Is it my turn to talk?
Jeez, what was up with that last night?
I don't know. Kane had a lot of good things to say, but he wouldn't shut up.
He wouldn't shut up, but then also the head nodding or the shaking of his head with Pence. It kind of, you know, he had a disappointed look on his face and the shaking of his head. I mean, either one of them. So my test is always I turn off the volume and who do I think is making any sense? So.
Yeah, and that would have been time to buy a new TV, or maybe cut your cable. No, I mean it was fine. Kane needed a little less sugar and needed a nap. That's all. And Mike Pence did. I actually felt bad for Mike Pence, because Mike Pence had a look on his face last night as he was going through it. Going, and the unstated thing was, cut me some slack, bro. You know I don't buy any of this crap I'm saying.
I think that's exactly right.
Yeah.
Penn seemed eminently reasonable, but what are you supposed to say to some of those things?
Yeah.
You know?
No, it's not good. Not good.
Oh, well. You know what you're getting into, I guess.
Listen, I appreciate you being on. After Trump wins in November, I'll be kicked out of the country, but I hope wherever I'm doing the show from, at a ship at sea, you'll still come on as well.
Canada. Isn't that the backup plan? Canada?
I love hockey, but I don't love cold so much. So,
All right.
I don't know. We'll figure something out.
All right. Bora. All right.
Keep your opinions to yourself. Bridget Gaynor, Cook County Commissioner. Nice job. By the way, how about a hand for her?
Way to
nice go, job. Nice job by you. Let's take a break and come back and get to the big story next on 720 WGN.
Please rise. Court is now in session.
Karen Conti, attorney at law. And the Karen Conti Law Firm is where and what is it?
It's in the heart of the Loop of Chicago, and my number is 312-332-7800.
And what's it called? What's the company called?
Oh, it's called Conti Law.
Did you come up with that yourself?
I did. I just didn't want a bunch of names, you know, that name after name after name that no one can spell. So it's pretty simple.
Do you have a high fashion stylish logo, much like yourself?
Yeah, I did. I designed it myself.
That's it done by you. All right, yeah. Good segment. Kim Kardashian, a breathless nation is waiting for news on this. Is there any legal angle to this Kim Kardashian robbery?
Well, anytime you have something that happens at a hotel, you know, you have the issue of security. And, you know, I don't know this hotel, and I don't know, I assume it's a nice place. But, you know, there should have been security that prevented this from happening. So I really don't know. On the other hand, the law is that if a criminal action of a third party sort of trumps the idea that that you have safety and security. So if you've got armed gunmen who come in and take over the hotel, even though you have security, there was nothing they could have done. So I would need to know more facts about how this happened. Certainly when you're flashing around a $4 million diamond ring, I'm not blaming her for being a victim, but, you know, that does attract a certain element of people who are going to, you know, maybe look for an advantage here. So I need more facts to know if there would be some kind of lawsuit, but certainly she'd be covered by her insurance. Hopefully she did have insurance.
There is a common sense aspect of this, though, that really does need to be discussed, and that is, if you're going on vacation and you go on Facebook or Snapchat or whatever and you say, by the way, I'm going on vacation, the expensive stuff's in the living room, you know, or whatever. I mean, it was basically that blatant. She shows off a ring that Kanye bought her. We're having a great time in Paris. We're clubbing in Paris. And then a few minutes later, or an hour later maybe, the rest of the family is out dancing at a club and Kim's not there. Like, you don't have to be a genius criminal to realize there may be an opportunity here, especially when we also hear the backstory that whoever these creeps are, they may have been stalking her for a couple of days. So, you know, maybe the Kardashians learned something from this. Maybe they don't. But I think the larger lesson for your kids or your grandkids or whatever is to just tell them, look, the sharing thing is fine, but use your head. Don't be telling people there's something of high value that's prime for the taking and put it on Facebook.
What we normal people don't realize is that the criminal element is always out there and they're always looking for an advantage. We just walk among the world and we don't pay attention to that. But there are people that all they do is figure out how they're going to commit their next crime, and they're looking for a crack. They're looking for an avenue to do that. And with these high-end jewelry situations, I mean, you know, she's not the only celebrity who has had stuff stolen. There's been plenty of celebrities who have had things taken in different places, whether it's in their home or off their person. So, you know, this is, you know, when you wear that kind of stuff, you're going to attract that kind of person, clearly.
The Donald Trump tax situation, everything that Trump did in regards to his taxes and the laws from the 90s, the majority of which are still in the tax code, because the tax code just gets fatter, it never gets smaller. It stinks to high heaven, but it was all legal, wasn't it?
Yeah, I don't see any problem with it. I mean, people, you know, if you have losses, you can bring those forward for a number of years, and many, many years, in fact, and it's been legal forever. I mean, nobody likes to hear that because it sounds like, you know, it sounds like a loophole, but, you know, the tax code is filled with loopholes. And, you know, I'm not saying that I like the fact that Donald Trump isn't paying taxes on making all this money, but he, you know, he's got tons of accountants. He's got all these people who are professionally advising him. There's no question it's probably legal.
Yeah, and again, another fine example of how much he relates to you, the Trump supporter. He's got staffs of accounts to figure out a way not to pay taxes. But it was completely legal, so Trump haters need to drop this argument that he broke some law until there's some evidence that he broke some law. But again, show your tax return. If you're so proud of it, genius, show your tax return. Six 51, Karen Conti. Let's talk about the Derrick Rose case here. Derrick Rose is charged with what, Karen?
Well, it really a charge. It's a lawsuit. It's just like a civil lawsuit, which would be like a car accident lawsuit. But in this case, the woman is claiming assault and battery, which are civil in nature as well as criminal, and probably emotional distress, intentional infliction of emotional distress, and torts. We call these torts like that, all relating to what she says was a rape that occurred with a bunch of his friends.
So you can't claim sexual assault as a standing in a civil case?
Well, you can, but it's called other things. You know, it's called an offensive contact is battery, and when you call it an attack, it's assault. And when you do something intentional and to hurt somebody, that's intentional infliction of emotional distress. So you basically are saying you were raped, but the law provides a cause of action, we call it, for those types of things that relate to that action.
Why is this woman's identity being made public?
Well, in a civil lawsuit, it's very different than a criminal, and you don't have any rights that are stronger than anyone else's rights. Listen, and again, I'm very sympathetic to people who claim to have been raped, but the idea is she brought this lawsuit. She subjected herself to this jurisdiction. She brought Derrick Rose to this court, and to say, okay, now you're not going to say my name because some people might not like me because he's a celebrity and I'm a nobody, that's just not the law. And we have this idea of First Amendment, and we shine the light on our judicial system, and we have public trials, and everything is public. And why should she be different? Now, if you're in a criminal case and you're a witness and you're not bringing the suit because the government brings the charges, there might be a reason to hold your name confidential. But here, that argument just doesn't hold weight, and judge is right in releasing her name.
Karen, civil suit question, as long as we're on the topic. The family has to pay, right? Or the estate, whoever loses has to pay. But the reality, I guess I always go back to OJ and then recently the Sandra Bland civil suit as well. What if they don't pay? Or they don't? Who, I mean, really, who has $1.9 million or whatever it might be laying around?
Well, but the OJ thing is a good analogy, yeah, because I don't think the father and the sister have gotten a dime, right?
Right.
They've gotten a little bit of money, and, you know, it takes diligence in a case like OJ because he, you know, he was on his way out. And, you know, every time there was an auction, every time there was something, that family was there trying to get the money. In Derek's case, he's probably got assets. And what you do when you get a judgment is you levy on the assets. If he's got a house, you put a lien on it. If he's got a car, you take the car away. You can even garnish his wages. They could even go to his team and say, every time he gets a paycheck, we want to garnish his wages. So there are ways to get this done. My guess is this is going to settle. This should settle. I really think that, you know, when you have a situation like this, it doesn't matter what happened. It doesn't matter if this was consensual or not. This is going to shine a light on some very ugly behavior involving other men and a sex act involving a woman who is drunk or unconscious. And it's not going to reflect well on anybody here. And if I were Derrick Rose's lawyers, I would settle this case and be done with it. But, you know, it hasn't happened so far.
Yeah, I understand. Three men in the room. But I've never understood that. Look, there's the kids listening, so let's move on. All right, but there's one other piece of this I do need to ask you about, and that is the fact that there is allegedly some explicit material posted by her to social media or other places. Can that be brought up? Should that be brought up?
Well, the judge is not allowing that to be talked about right now, and I don't think he's going to let that into trial. And this is the reason. Listen, if you really were raped and you really were damaged by what happened, what difference does it make if you've posted things on your, you know, on Facebook or Snapchat or whatever that are sexually explicit in nature? Does that make it less likely that something happened? Does that make it less likely that she was damaged by someone who assaulted her in the most personal ways?
No, the answer is no.
I think you remove that and you make it all about what happened that night, what happened afterwards. Did she seek medical help? Was she emotionally distraught? And what are her damages? And what if he really did do this, what are the damages that we assess against him to punish him so that he doesn't do it again? So that really is a focus on what should happen here.
But I would assume that it's a standard operating procedure for defense attorneys to try to sully the alleged victim's reputation if they can, to either force a settlement or force them to just back away from the case completely.
Right, and it's kind of a distasteful part of your job. I mean, I've never done it myself, but it can backfire. It definitely can backfire. But listen, here's a woman who's having a relationship with this guy, and she is involved with these other guys in some way, shape, or form, and she didn't report it right away. So you got all these strikes against her, and there are going to be people sitting on the jury saying, "What is this woman doing? In this kind of situation, she put herself there." And of course, that's not the inquiry, and that's not the standard of proof, but that's what people think. That's their common sense. Why did you mix yourself up with these people, who maybe, are a little bit different when it comes to their preferences? So again, dirtying up the victim is a standard operating procedure. But the judge has really, I think, tried to do a good job of stopping that in the press.
It's 657. How do people get a hold of you?
You can call me at 312-332-7800 or email me, better yet, at kconti@kcontilaw.com.
Enjoy your day.
Okay, you too. Bye.
See you. 657. News coming up at 7. Jason DeSanto, senior lecturer at Northwestern University, will join us in a moment. And Tim Kaine will continue to try to get people to notice him. And let's see, we'll get to the news next on 720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show.
We welcome Governor Mike Pence and Senator Tim Kaine.
Ukraine, or now their heavy-handed approach?
You both have said Vladimir Putin is a better
man. We're going to get to Russia in just a moment.
And paid a few taxes and lost $1 billion a year. You are Donald Trump's apprentice. Let me talk about this
issue. Senator, I think I'm still on my time.
Well, I think, isn't this a discussion?
This is our open discussion.
Let's talk about this.
Let me interrupt you and finish my sentence if I can. While she was Secretary of State.
Okay, now I can weigh in.
She had a private server.
I get to weigh in now. Let me just say this.
I did raise, Senator.
Keep that pay-to-play process out of the reach of the
Governor Pence,
because Hillary Clinton failed to renegotiate.
More American troops
Hillary Clinton failed to renegotiate a status of forces agreement.
No, that is, if you can't meet the Nixon standard,
people at home cannot understand either one of you when you speak over each other. I would please ask you to wait until it is that the other is finished.
Boy, that escalated quickly. I mean, that really got out of hand fast.
Mike Pence, Tim Kaine, the VP debate last night. Who won? Jason DeSanto here to answer the question. By the way, a little awkward this morning. I believe you're the only Northwestern professor that didn't win a Nobel Prize.
It's not going to happen. I could sit in the studio for 50 years.
I just feel badly that you decided to come in here instead of continuing to your Nobel work. Yes. Must be a lab somewhere. All right, so you know this stuff better than anybody. The walk away that I think most people got in the first 45 minutes last night was Senator Kaine, shut the hell up.
He was dutiful. He had a job to do, and he tried to do it, but it wasn't effective.
Well, I did, but by the end, he sort of mellowed out, and the sugar rush that he was on started to wear off. Don't you think he did do it on some level where he pushed Pence into a position to defend Trump, which Pence chose not to do?
I think that's true, but okay, so 2 points there. First, yes, he settled in. By about the 45-minute mark, Kaine got slower in his answers, more measured. His voice dropped, which is important. He wasn't at some high pitch, where only dogs could hear the answer. And he had more authority, and he was making his points more successfully. Yes. On the Pence point, not defending Trump, it's true that a lot of times he didn't defend every single thing Trump had said. But that was the best strategy in a debate where your job was to defend Donald Trump. I mean, if you had to defend every single thing he had said, you would be in the weeds the entire debate, like Donald Trump. Right? So a lot of people were saying,
you would have needed six debates.
And a Nobel Prize. Right. You would have won.
Right.
But he, some people were saying, well, Pence only helped himself because he didn't defend Trump. That's true. He did help himself, I think, perhaps over the long term. But the best strategy for helping Trump was to not take the bait on every single thing that Kaine said. That's what he did.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, because the rest of the media has taken this and run with the previous assertion. All right, so do we walk away knowing anything more than we knew when we started?
We know that Kaine can be loaded up with about 50 different lists and spend most of the time attacking. if you look at vice presidential debates within a campaign, they basically can do three things that are helpful. The first thing is they can stabilize a race for a campaign that's reeling.
Right.
Did that happen? Maybe. I think part of that depends on what happens the rest of this week on the narrative, whether or not Pence was simply lying during the debate.
Well, I also need to see the ratings, see how many people actually watched it, right?
Yeah, although there'll be plenty of coverage that'll say Pence was really true. Effective
that's
last
true.
Night.
That's true.
And part of the stabilizing will have to do with whether Trump learns from what Pence did. We'll get back to that in a second. The other piece of it is, does it stir up partisans? Does it make them feel better about life? And that's probably true. I mean, if you're a Trump supporter, you liked what Pence did, and it probably got you pretty excited, a little bit like Biden's performance did for Obama in 2012 after he had a bad debate. So if we look at those two measures, they probably did pretty well. For Trump. But I think that those two outstanding questions, does Trump learn from Pence? I think the answer is probably going to be no. And does the narrative change where Pence's victory is somehow seen as a defeat because he lied? I think we'll see that develop in the next couple of days. We don't know.
See, I felt like it was too close to call for the second half of the debate. And last night, I actually thought Kay may have won by a skosh because I thought he got the job done, even though he annoyed the hell out of me. But sleeping on it, it does feel more like a Pence win, but not dramatic. And neither one of these guys gave me a tremendous amount of confidence that if something were to happen to the top of the ticket, we're in so much better shape. And I thought that was one of the things that if either one of them could have left that impression, we walked away, that would have been a clear winner.
It was an interesting lesson, though, in how you can control a discussion by saying less, which is really what Trump did, or Pence did.
Where's the lesson I'll never learn?
Same here. And just by pulling back. And I thought Cain was a little overloaded with information. His answers tended toward the list versus Pence was using more stories. I mean, really good answers do both. But I think in a debate context, a good story can tell as much. And really just on demeanor, Cain wasn't as comfortable as I've seen him in prior debates. For example, in Virginia debates, when he was debating George Allen, when they were running for the Senate, he was much more affable while also being cutting. At times throughout the debate, and the affability kind of shrunk away last night. I also think being in a seated position probably didn't do him any favors, because his affect is kind of a little slightly more agitated affect. His voice is a little higher. He talks a little faster.
Talks with his hands,
and all those things don't connote a lot of authority. Whereas if you're standing up, at least you're at the lectern. You've got all the the indicators of authority as well.
To me, that was one of the reasons. I think you and I talked about this. Yeah. That was one of the reasons that Cain appeared to be more obnoxious is because of the close proximity of the three people at that table.
Yes.
I mean, we're now sitting about 6 or 8 feet apart from each other. They were sitting about 3 feet or 2 feet apart from each other. If I'm 3 feet from you and I'm screaming for 45 minutes, I can't wait to get away from you.
Well, the old idea in terms of negotiating debate formats was that the seated format would produce more collegiality and more of a discussion. Some candidates are less comfortable in the seated format. Barack Obama's one of them, actually. He prefers to be standing up when he's speaking. Well, no, he was standing, actually, in that first debate in Denver.
I prefer watching them in a standing format behind the dais. I mean, that's just a personal thing. I'm sure other people like watching them seated, but in a weird way, and I use this word not too lightly, I almost enjoyed, maybe wrong choice of words, getting to know their personalities a little bit better, because we really haven't seen them at this length with each other face to face ever.
Their families don't even know who they are. Until
Mike Cain and Tim Pence.
What if we gave the moderator like a Nerf squirt gun, and Elaine Quijano was having trouble controlling them, and then for debates 3 and 4. Right? 3 and 4, yeah.
Yeah.
Whoever's doing the moderator. Well, I think it's Cooper. Anderson Cooper in St. Louis Sunday night. He's got a Nerf gun, and it's a squirt gun, and if they don't listen after the first, please. You get a shot to the head.
He's being joined by Martha Raddatz, so they have two in the town
Martha
hall.
Martha Raddatz is a ball buster.
Oh, yeah.
And I use that as a technical political term.
No, she's very effective, and he is too. I mean, the key to these moderating, people asked last week, should a moderator be able to fact check? And my answer is no, a moderator's job is to moderate. Mm-hmm. And last night what we saw was failing at the first job, to moderate the discussion, to make sure people don't talk over each other. And that has to start at the beginning. if it doesn't start at the beginning, it gets catalyzed and can get worse. Now, you have to put yourself in the position of these two debaters. I mean, we're being a little harsh on Kane, but there are nerves. I mean, there are just flat-out nerves.
And right, and you got 9 million things you want to make sure you get in, right?
When he came in and started writing, he is, my guess is, downloading everything that he had been thinking about that he wasn't allowed to bring back on stage, and he wanted to get down on that pad of paper before he forgot.
He was writing like a maniac.
Yeah, he wasn't writing anything that Pence was saying. He was writing all the stuff that he had thought about that he wanted to get across, and then you got to get it down on paper before the debate really gets rolling because you can't bring it out there with you. So you have all these nerves. These guys are hyped up, and the moderator has to be able to listen for that and gently but firmly interject. I mean, it's easy for me to say sitting here, but if you don't do that at the outset, things get catalyzed from there. Prime example of this was primary debate. You remember the CNBC debate where Ted Cruz went off attacking the media and John Harwood asked the question that was ridiculous? And once Cruz attacked the media and the moderator, it was, you know, 10 people trying to ring the bell on their talking points for the next 90 minutes, just attacking the moderator. You have to stop it early.
Maybe the moderator should control the mics, kind of like, you know,
like running
have the
board.
Little cough button. Exactly. Yeah. Have the little cough button and just shut it off.
So after the last round of debate,
it's not a bad idea. Yeah. If they had a mic switch, they could shut off.
Well, there is a modified idea of that that's made its way around. After the debate cycle in 2012, there was a group that got together with debate coaches and advisors from both sides and said, well, how can we redesign these debates? And one of the ideas they had is something called the chess clock model.
Oh, yeah.
Which is every speaker has 45 minutes to talk, and every minute they talk comes out of their time. They can use the time however they want. If they want to give an 8-minute answer to one question, that's fine. But then you hit the clock and you're down to 37 minutes. And as it ticks down, you get to zero, your mic's cut. That's it. So you are in charge of your own time. And the moderator's job is just to make sure that the discussion proceeds, not to really ask a bunch of
questions. Interesting idea. It's a shot clock.
It is a shot clock.
Kind of like your mobile service plan.
Yes.
Use up the minutes and then you stop it.
Yes, and you get 1 gigabyte for $4,000.
I would have rather now. Seen the cute girl from the AT&T store last night. Than
the Steve Cochran Show.
We have a tax code, Senator, that actually is designed to encourage entrepreneurship.
But why won't
country.
He release his tax return?
Well, we're answering the question about the business thing. His tax return that showed he went through a very difficult time. But he used the tax code just the way it's supposed to be used, and he did it brilliantly.
How do you know that? You haven't seen
a runway because he's created a business that's worth billions of dollars today.
How do you know that?
I know you are, but what am I? Jason Santo here, senior lecturer at Northwestern University. He watches and analyzes the debate so you don't have to. I live tweet him and then try to figure out how I can get my 90 minutes back. Andrea, Santa Jason.
Jason, I think we got out of the debate much of what we expected with Pence hammering Clinton, Kane hammering Trump. Is there anything that surprised you? Anything that we learned that maybe we didn't before?
Well, you're right about Kane hammering Trump. He said Trump's name 160 times.
Is that right?
Yeah, so the only surprise might be exactly how on message that he was. Beyond that, I think the only thing I was surprised was that Kane was a little more agitated than I thought he would be. But substantively, I didn't think so. In terms of the messaging, we talked earlier about maybe there being some route, maybe some lesson that Pence showed Trump on how to handle particular issues. I mean, really, he just stayed focused on the issues that Trump should have been focused on in the first debate anyway. Trade, the economy, the middle class. And in that way, the vice presidential debater can pave the way for the actual presidential candidate. That actually did happen in 2012. When Joe Biden showed up and debated Paul Ryan, he was relentless about talking about the middle class, which Obama had really not been during the first debate in Denver. And when they met again for the second debate, Obama really picked it up from there and used a lot of the roadmap that Biden had provided. So whether there's something surprising here, I don't know, but there is a roadmap if Trump could follow it. But he doesn't particularly strike me as somebody, despite being the candidate of change, of somebody who can personally change very well. And it will require change to be ready for another debate in an entirely different setting, which the town hall setting is.
Sunday night is town hall?
Yes.
And it'll be in St. Louis with two really terrific moderators, I think, Anderson Cooper and Martha Raddatz. Let me get off the debate for a second. I want to play a clip for you of President Clinton. Now, let me just backstory this by telling you. I think President Clinton is one of the smartest guys to ever sit in the Oval Office because of his own personal demons. He'll be remembered as a guy with a pants problem more so than anything he may or may not have accomplished.
Dockers.
That's, yeah, well, Dockers with flimsy zippers. But that's his problem. That's his problem, and that's his legacy, and that is what it is. And maybe that goes to a bitterness about what Obama may or may not have accomplished and the credit he's getting here in the latter stages of Bill Clinton's existence, because yesterday he stood up at a speech, presumably to tout his wife, at a time when Barack and Michelle Obama are out touting his wife, and he said this about Obama's signature legislation.
The current system works fine if you're eligible for Medicaid, if you're a lower-income working person, if you're already on Medicare, or if you get enough subsidies on a modest income that you can afford your health care. But the people that are getting killed in this deal are small business people and individuals who make just a little too much to get any of these subsidies. Why? Because they're not organized, they don't have any bargaining power with insurance companies, and they're getting whacked. So you've got this crazy system where all of a sudden 25 million more people have health care, and then the people are out there busting it sometimes 60 hours a week, wind up with their premiums doubled and their coverage cut in half. It's the craziest thing in the world. Figure out an affordable rate and let people use that, something that won't undermine your quality of life, won't interfere with your ability to make expenses, won't interfere with your ability to save money for your kids' college education. And let people buy in to Medicare or Medicaid.
What is he thinking? And why couldn't that speech be made 5 weeks from now?
I can't psychoanalyze Bill Clinton.
Were you as surprised as I was to hear them? Because he went off the rails.
It's been a long time since he said something that seems to be at cross purposes with the current administration, which was a more frequent occurrence earlier in the administration. It certainly was when his wife was running against Obama before we were in this administration. I heard Steve Schmidt, the former Republican strategist, say that in about 5 minutes there, less than that, Clinton made a better critique of Obamacare than the Republicans did for 5 years and 10,000 debates.
Totally agree.
And that's why Obama called him the explainer-in-chief.
Right.
I think that he said that twice. He said that in two different places. That wasn't just one speech.
Yeah, and by the way, it's a real mistake. Clinton's not wrong about what he said in the big picture, but the way this comes off, it's a Trump campaign commercial and that he can run with now 5 weeks before the election. And also, you sort of legitimize the repeal or replace argument for Republicans, which is a ridiculous argument because, again, it's replace it with what? It's a big, weighty law that needs to be adjusted, not blown up completely.
Well, that is his larger argument. It's hard to hear from that extended clip, but that's the context in which he was
saying.
Right,
because all you pull out of that clip
is that we have to do better.
It's the craziest thing in the world.
It's a little too quotable for this part of the campaign.
Yes. Yeah.
Kind of blur the differences a little bit.
So yeah. I know he's not tight with Barack Obama. I know he may be a little angry about the 08 campaign still and other things, because I think he felt disrespected in 2008. But I don't buy into what I heard this morning that he doesn't want his wife to be president. This was some sort of sabotage job. That doesn't make sense at all.
No, but you know what's interesting is I'm thinking about it now and the fact that this is the smaller clip within a larger context. And as good as he is at explaining things, the thing he really got nailed down in 2008 was saying that Obama was a fairy tale, which actually was part of a larger argument about Obama's position on the Iraq War. It wasn't about Barack Obama as a candidate or his campaign.
Or delegitimizing him as a man.
Here's this larger argument he's making. He says something inside of it which is slightly incendiary, particularly when taken in that particular context, and he gets himself into trouble. And it looks like, perhaps for all his gifts at being able to explain, he's lost a little bit of the sharpness on having the pithy statement, which can't be taken out of context.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, if Hillary and Bill actually spoke with each other, he'd be in a lot of trouble right now. Nice job by you, as always.
Thank you, guys. Good to be here.
I would like to give you a Nobel Prize, but I don't have one.
I'd receive it if you had one, but it wouldn't be worth much, sorry.
No, it really wouldn't. Yeah. But the good news is you wouldn't have to fly to Oslo. We'll be bothering you again soon, Mr. DeSanto, because there's another debate right around the corner. Quick break, back with the big story next on 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
The first couple to leave us in tonight's double elimination is... The first couple eliminated tonight, Babyface and Allison. On this fourth week of competition, Janet and Gleb, Vanilla Ice and Whitney, the next couple leaving right now is... Vanilla Ice.
Listen. I was surprised, Mary Vanderbilt, as we go to the Dancing with the Stars review. What a good guy Vanilla Ice appears to be.
You know, I was surprised, too. He just turned into a really nice guy, sincere, you know, good with his kids.
Yeah.
Like
a regular dude.
Regular guy. He had, like, 5 concerts this week, so he had so much going on, but he did the dance,
nice,
like, really well. And he didn't rap this time.
Yeah, and he's like almost 50.
Yeah. I thought he did okay the first time. You guys really didn't strong. Like him doing the flipping around.
Yeah, I didn't like that one. But, you know, he got better and he was good. And I didn't think he should go this week.
And Babyface. I love Babyface. But Babyface can't dance.
No.
By the way, get a little whip appeal ready for me, Jake. I know you hate it, which is one of the reasons I like Planet. So grab that. All right. So who advances?
Well, 9 people. It's, you know, Kelvin Johnson, who was so good. He did the Charleston, and that guy can sweat, I tell you. He was sweating through the entire performance.
Yeah.
Anyway, Maureen McCormick, she's still in there, which I'm glad since I have her in the pool. But she's just into herself a lot. You know, she just, I'm living in another world. This is marvelous. You know, that kind of...
Yeah, it's kind of annoying.
Yeah. She's getting...
And Mary Lou Henner's a little annoying, too.
Mary Lou, she...
We love her, friend of the show, but...
Yeah, yeah. Wow. She's got that high memory thing, you know?
Yeah. What are they, she remembers everything. I have another thing where I don't remember anything. I have, like, a similar gift, but
opposite.
I don't remember anything at all.
Well, she didn't remember all of her dance, so that was kind of weird. I didn't get... With her perfect memory, she should remember everything, right? I mean, she should do it
perfectly. Well, she remembers dates and times and places and things. But not steps, yeah.
Yeah, so that was a problem. Amber Rose, you know, the big booty girl, she's still there. I don't think she should be. I think
you
she should be gone.
You know else annoying is...
Ryan Lochte? He's not, actually.
Well, Ryan Lochte's a friggin' idiot.
He's turning okay.
Oh, he's a buffoon.
Not that bad.
He's a dope.
Ooh. Ooh. Gee, Ryan Lochte, he doesn't
complete
like
dope. Now I've forgotten who else is annoying.
a guy or girl?
Male or female?
I think it was a woman. Oh, yeah, the judge.
Aaron Andrews?
No, the blonde judge.
Oh, Carrie Ann.
Oh, Julianne Hough.
Yeah.
You don't like Julianne Hough?
No, because big booty girl, Amber Rose?
Yeah.
No. Big booty girl, you know, she's not breaking down DNA in the basement. She's just there. She's doing her thing. So I saw a clip where she said something about, you know, you hurt my feelings.
Oh, wah, wah, wah. You know,
yeah, but then little blondie there, what's her name?
Julianne Hough.
Julianne Hough. Didn't really apologize.
She didn't apologize.
But
she's
did
like,
afterwards.
Oh, I am just here to judge. Okay. B-I-T-C-H. Okay.
All she said was she felt uncomfortable. That's all she said.
Who felt uncomfortable? I missed
Julianne
that.
Said she felt uncomfortable, but you know it was one of those side
Ryan
comments.
Ryan Lochte is an idiot.
Have...
Ryan Lochte should only be able to stay in if he can answer a math problem.
Well, then he'd be out in about 30 seconds.
But he does like to eat pizza on
dope.
Fridays.
Totally.
We did
dope.
Find that out.
All right, who's going to win? The little gymnastics kid?
Yeah, you know what? It's great. She's a wonderful dancer. She works her butt off. She tries hard, but it's just so canned. I mean, you know it's going to happen. Because she's unbelievably good compared to everyone else.
Well, the
There's
little
no...
person is a really good dancer, right?
Yeah, but, you know.
What is her name?
She's gonna, Tara. Jo
Would it help if I knew anyone on this show?
No, you know
no
what?
No one does.
I was going to say she's annoying and I didn't want to be rude.
That's
but
the
you
thing.
Know what?
You can't make fun of her. You can, I mean,
no,
I,
I'm not making fun.
Not,
I'm
making
just
fun
saying
of her height. I, mean,
all,
I thought she was a good dancer.
They all are annoying. I mean, I know they're all, C and D-list celebrities, but they're all annoying in some weird way.
Yeah.
Yeah, but there is that whole. I mean, Mary, you're a dancer. There's a whole intimacy thing that goes on, right?
Well, so yeah, it's uncomfortable to a certain degree.
But they all think they're family, and they all really feel like they're family. Either that or the entire thing's scripted. But I refuse to believe that because I'm sensitive.
Right. But you guys got to understand, dancing is very hard. It is very hard. When people dance that don't know how to dance or anything like that.
Like me.
No, if I learn a new dance and after I do it, I feel cocky. I feel like, wow, that was good. You know, you got to have that confidence. If you don't have that confidence, you're not going to get any better. So that's, I think, that attitude of annoyingness kind of rubs off after a while because you're improving, you're getting better, you're getting more confidence, and you start to believe in yourself and get annoyed.
Well, you know who I like is the country singer. What's her name?
Oh, Janet Kramer.
Yeah, I think she's good.
Yeah, she is. She's okay. I think she's actually gotten a little not improved every week. She hasn't improved every week.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And the race car driver is really good.
Oh, he's awesome. I do love him.
He's my guy in the pool. I hope he does well.
I hope he wins somehow, beats Lori Hernandez, but I don't think that's going to happen.
But I remember interviewing Vanilla Ice when Ice Ice Baby was a hit. Mm-hmm. And just wanting to punch him in the throat because he came in the studio and he was, hey, what's up, bro? Well, you know, we're just doing it. We're doing it in Miami. You know, that's all we're doing it. So you're doing it? Yeah, we're doing it. That's all we're doing it. And he was a complete character, right? Complete act. He's a very likable dude.
Yeah, he's chilled, no pun intended. Yeah. He's gotten very chill over the years.
Talking about how sore he was, and you know, because he's old. I just liked him. I thought he was great.
Yeah, I thought he improved. His name, Matthew Van Winkle?
Rob Van Winkle.
Oh, Rob Van Winkle.
How are we doing on middle age Dancing with the Stars?
Yeah, I'm going for that. Yeah.
No, it's just like, you know, it's guys my age who just go out and... They put their hands over their head just slightly because that's as high as they can get them.
Like Bill Nye the Science Guy, he would just kind of have all the dancers dance around him. Well, sorry, no offense,
Dave.
Have
any lifts?
The White Man Overbite. And the only two songs you play are Celebration and Old Time Rock and Roll.
That'd be too many injuries.
All right, so you still say the gymnast is going to win?
You know, yeah, unless something goes really bad, unless she pulls something or whatever.
Who has her in our pool?
I don't know.
I don't remember.
Justin Kaufman, I think.
The fact that we have a Dancing with the Stars pool is ridiculous.
I know it is.
Oh, come
funny.
On. It's fun.
My hope is that they will do one water dance and Ryan Lochte will forget to swim and drown.
Like Zumanji, like the Cirque du Soleil, that it's all in water.
He already did some synchronized swimming thing in the water. He did that.
Ever since I was 8 years old, I always got pizza on Fridays.
Seven times four.
21.
You love that. You love that.
That's actual Ryan Lochte math. Vice presidential debate winner. Most of the national media says Pence by a skosh. Last night I thought maybe Kane by a skosh. That's a draw. It's a draw. I just think if Tim Kaine makes any more public appearances on behalf of Secretary Clinton, no more sugar. No, got to settle down. No more sugar. That's the rule. Got to be the rule.
Maybe there's nervous energy.
There's a lot of that. Yeah, a lot of that. Elaine Quijano was frightened. She ran out of the back of the room.
I did feel sorry for
her. Tell him to stop yelling. At 7:50. You said she's in Illini, huh?
She's in Illini, okay. Yeah.
Was she there when you were there?
No, she was a couple years after me, but she was taught by Robin Kaler, who was one of our professors there, who's now one of the associate chancellors at the university.
Oh, okay.
So it was very cool.
At 7:56, make it 7:57 now. You know, you wonder, you hear about so much handling of the presidential candidates. Did you know the vice presidential candidates have handlers as well? We've got a vice presidential consultant of sorts on the phone. Sir, what is your name?
Good morning. Hello?
Yeah, it's Steve.
Yes, this is Anthony DeFace III.
Anthony DeFace?
Anthony DeFace III. My father and my grandfather, they both were my related.
Yeah, well, guessing your father and your grandfather were related. All right, so you are a vice presidential consultant?
Well, this is the kind of new thing we do. That's a company my grandpa started a long time ago. He says, let's do this. I go, I'll do it. And we did.
All right. So you did. But you said it's a new company that your grandfather started.
Well, he started back at 55. Here's the thing. We don't really handle these people. Yeah. You know, we just kind of go, okay, we'll help. We don't help the best guys. We don't help the top guys.
Yeah.
We only do like the name of the company is, guess what? We're not the top.
Does that fit on a business card?
It does. Slogans on the other side. The slogan that we have is, all your needs from B to Z.
Okay, because you don't have the A's.
We don't get that. They don't have, I don't know.
All right, so the top guys are not your guys. Your guys are the second guys and below.
Right, my grandfather started with Bud Abbott, Jay Silverheels. I mean, these are the people we had. I got, in the 70s, I picked up Vic Tabak, George Savalas.
I understand.
And Williams, Dottie Mouse, I got them both.
I understand at one point you had Ann Scherer.
Okay, no, it did not.
Oh, he did not. It must have been me.
No. we got into sports later in the 70s. I had Roland Hopper, Scottie Pippen, Matsui.
Yeah. I see the theme here. Yeah, you only do the second guys.
Yeah, we only work with companies. Like, I work with Roebuck, Davidson Motorcycles. You know, these Fitch clothes, Perry Scott. Have you heard of these things?
Yeah, Perry Scott.
We just got a new one, W. Rootbeer.
Yes. So you don't even have the A. You just have the W.
We don't know. We don't get it.
All right. Well, we'll run out of time quickly here, but you're a fascinating guy. Is there a website you'd send us to? Or, hey, here's an idea, because everything's about buttons and T-shirts and hats. Do you have any merchandise?
We got, that's what I'm doing for the VPs. I help them speak, because that's what I do well.
Yeah, there's no question.
And I said, here
that's
we go.
Yeah.
And we try to sell things. So I get licensing for their stuff. So for Tim Kaine, I've got a candy cane that I put together. We sell.
Oh, that's nice.
There's no, but we, the only difference, it's all white. There's no red stripe.
No, that's, yeah, nobody's whiter than Tim Kaine. That seems right.
And then Mike Pence, we put out a whole new line. Actually, we have these leftovers from the 60s, the Race Bannon dolls from Johnny Quest.
Okay, all right, fine. That seems
we
right.
Got, you pull the string, and all these words come out, but they don't make a sentence.
That seems right. That seems right. Those are all good.
So you can go to www. We're not the top.
I thought it was We're Not the Top Guys.
No, it's just that we're top. We're not the top.
We're not the top.
Blame my grandfather. I'm the third. My grandfather was Eugene.
Don't you need a .com or something after that, or you didn't actually invest in that part?
We can't even get that, the whole thing. We just got the ..
All right, listen, I appreciate it. Thank you, sir. Isn't that interesting that he would represent the vice presidents?
Right, and his grandfather started it all.
Yeah, We're Not the Top. That's the name of the company. And if you need clothing from Fitch, because he doesn't do the Abercrombie, he just does the Fitch.
And Perry Scott.
Yeah, and Perry Scott. It's 8 o'clock. We'll come back, get you news next. Dean Richards coming up, Senator Dick Durbin coming up live in studio. Chris Freitz later on, and the Wang Dang Doodle Picks for Week 5, all coming up on 720 WGN.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you?
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood. You know I love you more than what I should. Yeah, Hollywood. Well, kiss me, kiss me.
Continue with the Wintrust Community Banks Hour, Steve Cochran Show, and Dean Richards live from Channel 9.
I just thought I would interrupt you every time you start talking. A la debate-esque.
Look at me. We will talk to Senator Durbin live in studio in just a second. I just want to take a quick second to reference that there was a memorial service for Paul Green yesterday. And Paul Green's daughter spoke, and I never met her. And it's interesting, most of the people in the room hadn't, because she had moved out of town apparently a few years ago. But her name is Sarah Elizabeth Green, who spoke about her dad, who, of course, worked here for years, and everybody knows Paul Green. She gave one of the all-time great eulogies. She had everybody laughing, then she had everybody crying, then she had everybody laughing, and then she had everybody crying.
She was fantastic.
She was absolutely tremendous. She said a lot of kids would go to bed at night with books, Dean. She said, I went to bed with a yellow legal pad and a pen because we had to do math problems.
Math problems.
And then when she woke up, they were corrected. But with a really sweet note from her father, who she, you know, spoke really beautifully about. But anyway, a nice service for Paulie.
I love when she, at one point, Dean, she was holding a tissue, you know, and she was sniffling, and she was tearing up a little bit, and she kept sniffing and said, well, I feel like Donald Trump right now.
Yeah, and everybody laughs, and then she goes, oh, no, it was the mic.
That was
that's
unbelievable.
That's her dad's sense of humor.
She was great.
The great moment.
That's Paul's sense of humor. I can't even tell you the number of times during this cycle of, you know, the presidential election since Paul passed away that I've stopped and had to remind myself that he's passed away and that I can't call him and ask him what he thinks.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
About something. I miss him so much.
Senator Durbin's here. You knew Paul Green.
Very well. And I guess I can confess this now. Paul and I had the same girlfriend. Turned out to be the waitress at Lou Mitchell's counter, Donna Fenton, who Donna is just an amazing woman, big Cubs fan, 85 years old, and she loved Paul because he sat at that counter. I sat at that counter, and we used to talk about our girlfriend Donna.
Who had better game, you or Paul Green?
Well, I'm sure he's way ahead of me. He's such a rock on tour.
Who was the better tipper?
Yeah, well, we fought for that honor. But yeah, I have taken Donna to a Cubs game. So I will just tell you that great, great guy, well-respected by both political parties. And time and again, he was the go-to guy when you wanted to get an analysis of politics from the city on up to the Washington, D.C.
Yeah, an important part of the process in town, too, because he could give TV the 30 seconds they need, or he could do a longer-form stuff with us.
Yep.
So it was great. All right. Tyler Perry did Tyler Perry's Dean Richards interview last night. How did that go?
Very well. He was at the Carasotis Icon Theater in the South Loop last night. He's got a new Madea movie. It's called Boo, a Madea Halloween. It's perfect. Halloween and Madea are like the perfect combination. But we talked about it. It was interesting that the Icon Theater in the South Loop is very close to the Eric Rohn Theater, where the Madea character really kind of came into its own. We talked about that a little bit, and also we got a Madea presidential endorsement. You can listen to this.
They love you.
Yeah, man, it's always great.
They love you, and I know you have a lot of love for Chicago.
No, absolutely.
Also, I mean, it's more than ironic that we've seen this Madea movie here tonight, just blocks away from the Erie Crown Theater.
Yeah, absolutely, had to be, right? Right, that's where it all started for me. Well, it started down at the Regal Theater at 79th and Stony Island, and then we moved over to the Erie Crown. 18 years that I've been doing this, and started here in Chicago. I mean, Chicago was one of the first audiences to really give me a shot, so it's been great, man. It's been really great.
I can't believe you haven't done a Halloween movie, because it kind of fits Madea perfectly,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it's, and this was a lot of fun, man. It was more fun than I've had doing a movie.
Is Madea political at all? Is she observing?
Yes, Madea is political. She is voting for Hillary. She is voting for Hillary Clinton.
Yes, yeah, that's about it. She can't vote. She's a felon. But if she could, she would vote me up.
Hey, it's 2016. Felons can vote.
Get that in a political ad.
Ben Stiller told Howard Stern yesterday everybody ought to get a PSA test because he had prostate cancer.
2 years.
It's important to know.
2 years ago. Had surgery. He's doing fine.
And this will bring it right back to Senator Durbin. You may not be aware of this. Kim Kardashian was mentioned in the Supreme Court yesterday.
I don't know if I'm disturbed by this or impressed that a Supreme...
All Americans are represented, even the Kardashians.
Was this about the Paris burglary?
I don't know. What was the reference?
It was. There was the Justice Breyer was hearing a different legal fraud case. But in the argument with this other legal fraud case, he brings up the Kardashian case and says... if this Kardashian case turns out to be a hoax, would that be legal fraud? The mere fact that the Kardashians are brought up in a Supreme Court case.
It makes sense to me. It's 2016.
I'm not sure.
2016, anything's possible.
Well, I just say this is clearly the end of Western civilization as we know it. And
right?
We can mark the day.
The moon is turning red.
Yes.
All right, more from Dean all morning on Channel 9. Thank you, buddy.
See you guys.
And Senator Durbin in 60 seconds on 720 WGN. 821 Prince news today. They're giving tours of Paisley Park, a place that I spent some time in the early 90s. If you make it to Minneapolis, apparently public tours are going to begin. Of course, Prince died of an opioid overdose. And Senator Durbin's here with some news. on the scourge of opioids today. This could get a little deep in the weeds, but what are you doing, or what are you getting accomplished?
Here's what people don't realize, and that is that the federal government approves the production of opioid pills.
Okay.
We, through the, of all places, Drug Enforcement Administration, when pharma, the companies, come to us, they have to get permission for how many they will produce. Well, it's completely out of control. Pharma now produces enough opioid pills, listen to this, Steve, to give every adult in America a one-month prescription.
Are you kidding me?
I'm not making this up. And so we called in the DEA and said, what are you thinking? Because 80% of the people on heroin started with opioids,
right.
And it's a problem across America.
Sure.
And so they said, well, we'll take a look at it. Well, guess what? Pharma came in this year for the first time in 10 years plus, and they cut the allocation for opioids by 25%. So it reduces the flow of this drug. Now, let me tell you, people who have chronic and acute pain need pain relief.
But they can get it.
They can get it. And doctors have to be more vigilant. The Center for Disease Control came out with standards and said, stop writing these scripts over and over and over. It's an addiction. And so this is a step in the right direction.
Hydrocodone, oxymorphone, I believe is the pronunciation.
Yep.
Hydromorphone all being cut. Have less in the field. There's going to be less overdoses and less death.
Well, I think so. We hope so. But clearly there's more than is necessary for the to alleviate pain. And I'm glad DEA stepped up. It's the first time.
Did you see the vice presidential debate?
I did.
You've known Senator Kaine for a long time. Did he have too much sugar before the debate? He started out a little hot.
Well, the important thing to note, Steve, is that I am an absolute expert on political debates when I'm watching them on television. When I get on camera and in a debate,
it's a different game.
No telling what's happening.
It is a different game. So I mean, there's nerves, right?
He came on too hot.
Yeah.
And I noticed that, and Tim is a great fella and a good friend of mine. And I thought Governor Pence came off as steadier and calmer in the beginning and giving points. When it came to substance, I think Tim hit it out of the park again and again. But, it's up to the public. I don't think it's going to change the presidential race one vote. But
he put Pence in a position. There's two things about Pence. One is he wouldn't have won a rerun, in my opinion, in Indiana. So you could certainly make
That's
the
right.
extended argument that if you can't win an election in Indiana to stay in the governor's chair, you're ready to be the president of the United States because you're one heartbeat away. But the other piece of it is, I was hoping one of them would step up for those who aren't as connected with the race and appear to be more presidential. I don't know if they did, but I know Tim Kaine put Pence in a position to defend Donald Trump, and Pence passed. Many times, because so many of Trump's positions are indefensible.
They're indefensible. And there were these little grace notes here. Here was Kaine kind of turned away from the camera, slightly talking off into space.
Yeah.
Here was Pence looking at the camera. Those little things make a difference in the impression on the audience
right.
as to your sincerity. If
right.
you're not looking, at the camera.
TV is hard.
Yeah, it is very tough on it. That whole exchange about faith and politics, I know Tim, and I know it was a gutsy position running for governor of Virginia to say you oppose the death penalty. But he believes it morally, stood up for it, said, I'll do what the law says I have to do, but this is where I stand. That's a tough position to take.
Andrea brought up a great point yesterday about the flow of guns from Indiana mm-hmm. into Illinois, and we were hoping that would have come up last
week. I was hoping as well. And when it got to the faith and politics thing, I kind of knew where the exchange was headed. It was going to go to the issue of abortion. You just knew it was going to
sure.
head there. And I was waiting, and I have to confess, I was bouncing back and forth to look at the American League wildcard game to see what the score was, so I might have missed a little bit. But I think there was an opportunity for a rejoinder by Kaine that was missed.
Yeah.
He certainly could have come back to Pence and said, okay, you question me when it comes on to pro-life issues. I question you when it comes to the Bible's clear message
yeah.
To take care of the least of them.
Sure.
He had a comeback that I didn't hear. And anyway, as I said, I'm the best debater in the world when I'm watching on TV.
<There you go. laughs> yeah. Couch debates.
Yeah, no, I agree. I wish they would have brought the gun issue to the forefront, especially because Trump enjoys hammering on Chicago. And for our gun crimes, well, many of those weapons do come from Indiana. That's a fact. It's
40%.
Yeah.
When we did the background to figure out where in the heck in the deadliest sections of Chicago a few years ago, they came back and said 40% are coming over the border from gun shows where there's no background check. And I hope everybody, whether you love the Second Amendment or don't, agrees keep guns out of the hands of convicted felons. And that, unfortunately, is not being done in northern Indiana at some of these gun shows.
You know the folks that are running the Clinton campaign, I'm sure, because these are high-end folks that have been around the political circles for a long time. The direction of the campaign, you like it, you're not sure, where are you on that?
Well, it's the strangest campaign I've ever seen in my life.
Right.
I mean, go figure. Donald Trump running for president. You know, if someone had said that to a year ago, you'd say, get out of here. That's
right.
Not going to happen. And Hillary Clinton is in a position where she is continuing the Clinton name, which for many people is a cause for great celebration. For others, they're pushing back against it. I mean, that's a reality.
Sure.
You also have the fact that isn't articulated very often. Here is a woman aspiring to the highest office of the land. And there's some people who will never say the words, but they aren't buying it. They can't swallow it. It's something that is...
Oh, there's definitely a latent sexism out there. There's no question about it.
So you've got that. That's an overlay that nobody would have guessed in this campaign. And this interesting thing, if you've ever heard of this book, Hillbilly Elegy, Vance wrote it.
Yep.
I just started reading it. Fascinating book. And it really kind of taps into what the heck's going on with white males particularly. Why are they leaving the Democrats in droves?
Right.
And, you know, I want to know the answer to that.
Well, there's a legitimate anger out there, right? I mean, there's an anger of people that feel disconnected from what you guys in Washington are doing or not doing for them, with them, and about this country. Having said that, Donald Trump, in my humble opinion, ain't the answer. So that's why turnout's going to be really important. And for people that think, oh, I'll skip this one or sit it out, you got to go vote.
Hillary Clinton came to the Quad Cities for Labor Day. And I said, what can I do for you? She said, go to Iowa. So I spent 2 days in Iowa this week. And I went to some sections where there are no Hillary signs. And it's Trump, Pence, and Hillary for prison signs. I mean, and
he's hardcore stuff. Yeah.
Hardcore stuff. And I got to step back and say, Iowa? Donald Trump? How does that fit?
Man,
I mean, how does Donald Trump embody the values of a Midwestern conservative Iowa voter? Some of it is pure party loyalty, and we have them on our side, just like the Republicans have.
Sure.
But there is something that's still drawing people to ignore some of the outrageous things he says about all these different groups and say, oh, that's Donald, but we need change. And if he brings change, then we're for it.
I would just ask people again, I know you got to run, but do you dislike Hillary more than you love this country?
I think that's what it comes down to.
To
some basics. And it also, I've said to Mike Flannery and some others here in town, as he said, you know, over in Beverly, I'm running in the neighbors who are voting for Trump. How do you explain it? And I said, I can't. And I struggle with it. But it comes down to the basics that have been asked. You know, how do you explain to your daughter a few years from now when she says, Dad, did you really vote for Donald Trump?
You know, no, that was your mother.
Yeah. It's a little hard to explain when you put it in the context of this image that we're telling our children they should aspire to.
Well, and I'll leave you with this. The relatability of Trump in Iowa certainly goes to the fact that most Iowans have their own gold toilets fitted jets that they fly back and forth from Iowa to their penthouse. Unbelievable. And thank you for doing this.
Good to be here.
Nice to see you as always. 829, we'll come back with a big story next on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Look for Donald Trump apologizing to John McCain for saying he wasn't a hero. Oh, did Donald Trump apologize for calling women slobs, pigs, dogs, disgusting?
She apologized for saying...
Governor, it is his two minutes, please.
Did Donald Trump apologize for taking after somebody in a Twitter war and making fun of her weight? Did he apologize for saying African Americans are living in hell? Did he apologize for saying President Obama was not even a citizen of the United States?
Well, let me say first and foremost that Senator, you and Hillary Clinton would know a lot about an insult-driven campaign. It really is remarkable.
Crooked Hillary Clinton.
Yakov Smirnoff writing all their material. Ooh, good one. 843, friend of the show, Chris Freitz from CNN joins us now. Where were you last night when this was going on, Chris?
Like most of America, I was on my couch. I didn't have to make the schlep out to Farmville to watch a debate on a screen in a room. I could just sit on my couch and watch it.
I always commit to live tweeting these things, and then I lose 90 minutes of my life I'll never see again. Overall, we really didn't change the world last night. So did we learn anything?
Now, you know, Steve, it was kind of a snoozer. I mean, I think it's the debate that's not going to matter, right? I mean, in terms of what people think about when they go into that voting booth. I don't think, you know, on November 8th, it's going to be, oh, man, but, you know, Kane really, you know, I'm between Kane and Pence. I mean, it just doesn't happen, right? And watching this, it was interesting because Mike Pence, I think, in style was more comfortable, was cooler, and, you know, didn't take any of the bait that Tim Kaine was putting down. I mean, Kaine was just coming after him with, you know, defend what Donald Trump has said, defend these policy positions that many people believe are extreme. And Pence just continued to pivot and to hit his points on, you know, prosecuting a case against Hillary Clinton. And this was, you know, two guys who knew that this debate wasn't really about themselves. But Mike Pence, he dodged, did a good job, you know, tried to keep the case against Hillary Clinton going. Tim Kaine, though, I mean, I've covered Kaine for years. I've known him on the Hill as a senator. I've gone to church with him. I mean, he's a nice guy.
Right.
He's just a good dude. And the role of attack dog, you could see he was uncomfortable. I mean, he didn't look comfortable. He was interrupting. You know, a lot of people found that rude. You know, he was trying to kind of just unload the opposition research file that the Clinton campaign has on the Trump campaign. And, you know, that was his job. He didn't seem very comfortable at it. You know, a lot of folks thinking Mike Pence did himself, you know, a favor by not taking the bait on this. The word out of Trump land is, you know, Trump doesn't love to be outstaged, and people clearly believe that Donald Trump had a worse debate than Mike Pence. So we'll see if he can come back on Sunday and write that a little bit.
Well, a couple of things. One, you know him, I don't. So was Kaine likely uncomfortable being the attack dog last night? Because, you know, and Chuck Todd told us the same thing. This is at his core, a really nice guy.
Yeah, no, I think he was very uncomfortable, and he was well prepared, though. I mean, he knew what he wanted to say, and
maybe over prepared.
Over prepared, maybe. Yeah, I think you're right, Steve. I mean, this is a guy who clearly, you know, because they both are so disliked by the American electorate, and, you know, this is the first time we've seen in a general election where both candidates started the general election with more people disliking them than liking them. You know, the Clinton campaign strategy is, you know, just to destroy Donald Trump as unfit to be the president. And that's what Tim Kaine went out to try to prosecute that case. You didn't hear a lot from Tim Kaine about what Hillary Clinton's going to do for you as an American. This was his role as the number two to take shots at the top of the Republican ticket. And that's not his natural inclination. That's not his natural state of being.
We're talking with Chris Fritz from CNN. You know, we know that at 70 years old, Donald Trump's not going to change. And there's a honeymoon period that goes on, right? I mean, it's like you're dating. Okay, we're dating Trump. Good God, that's a frightening analogy. But, you know, you're getting to know him, and allegedly he's on his best behavior. One of the leaps I run into when I try to talk to people who are just fervent Hillary haters and therefore are going to vote for Donald Trump is, this is the best behaved Trump is going to be. 2 years down the road, when he is, you know, the president of the United States, he's not going to be better behaved. He's going to be farther off the deep end, and he's going to be a 72-year-old man who is crankier and more short-tempered. And I struggle with why people can't picture that ahead, because this doesn't end on November 8th. You got to live with your choice.
Steve, your vision of Donald Trump White House is him, like, standing on the front porch in, like, a T-shirt and socks
t-shirt.
And a hose. Get off my lawn! You know?
He is. He's a get off my lawn guy, but he's also at 3 a.m. He's getting up. He's tweeting the president of China yelling at him. You know, there's things you can't do as president.
I love your analogy, right? That, like, you know, that we're dating Donald Trump now. But I think Republican voters have already married. And I think part of the gnashing of teeth inside the Republican Party is, you know, do we just want to call for a quickie divorce? And that's when you talk to Republicans who are like, I'm going to vote for Hillary Clinton. Now, certainly, Hillary haters aren't going to vote for Hillary Clinton. They're probably going to vote for Donald Trump. Hillary Clinton's campaign sees their job as, you know, let's get all of those people in the middle there, even some Republican-leaning women, independents, those folks, on our side by showing to make your point that he's not going to get any better. This is he's asking for the job now. Anytime you're on a job interview, everybody knows you're on your best behavior, as you point out. I think that is the exact case that Hillary Clinton's trying to prosecute here.
On Sunday night, they're going to be in St. Louis, and they're going to be in a town hall setting with two pretty terrific debate moderators, and Anderson Cooper and
Martha Raddatz,
who really knocked it out of the park last cycle by being a moderator. What if anything, will Trump have learned and do differently Sunday night? Because I'll be honest with you, I think what we're going to see is what we saw the first time. He's going to be well-behaved and level for a short period of time, and then she'll light him up like a Christmas tree, and he'll go off the rails.
Well, I think he's going to try to do what Mike Pence did, which is, you know, prosecute that case. We heard from Mike Pence all kinds of things that we didn't hear from Donald Trump in the first debate. We didn't hear about the Clinton Foundation from Trump. We didn't hear about emails. We didn't hear about Benghazi. We didn't hear much about her foreign leadership experience. I think if he's going to learn any lessons, it's that, you know, he can't wait for the moderator to ask, you know, Donald Trump, was Benghazi a disaster? I mean, he needs to, you know, he needs to present the facts of that and why he believes that reflects her failed leadership. I think we'll see that. The trick for Donald Trump, though, is he has not done a lot of town halls here. And this is where Chris Christie comes in for him. Chris Christie, you know, I'm a Jersey kid, born and raised. So, right. You know, I've covered Christie a little bit as well. I mean, he's a town hall savant, right? Like, he gets it. He's held hundreds of them. He'll be advising Donald Trump on this, I believe. But he's taking questions from regular folks.
Right.
And if he doesn't like the question, you know, it's going to look really bad if he kind of pulls a Trump and gets belligerent with a voter, right? And so that's another kind of dynamic to watch here. It's one thing to beat up on the moderator who's part of the liberal media, the lamestream media, as Republicans often criticize, you know, mainstream reporters.
Right.
It's a much different thing, you know, when Johnny from North Dakota gets up and says, you know, well, how do you feel about energy? You know, and you tee off on the guy, right? So, like, that's another kind of dynamic to watch.
Chris, clearly this didn't have the pizzazz of the Biden-Ryan debate in 2012, but can either Trump or Clinton build on, and I use that word very lightly, can either Trump or Clinton build on anything from this debate that we can hear on Sunday?
That's a great question, Andrew. And I think, you know, I think they will, I think Trump wants to build on the prosecuting case against Hillary Clinton that Pence laid down. That was a good framework. And Hillary Clinton is going to continue what she did. I mean, we saw Donald Trump, you know, kind of get, as Steve said, lit up by Hillary Clinton a little bit there. I think she's going to want to continue to throw those barbs to prosecute that case. But also she's going to talk about what she can do for America if she is our president. So I expect to see that a little bit. But yeah, I think, Andrew, you're exactly right. It was not the pizzazz of Biden Ryan, and certainly wasn't the fun that we had with Sarah Palin and Joe Biden. Right, like that. You know, that was an off the chain kind of vice presidential debate. This one, not really as fun. I think this one is going to be quickly forgotten and consumed by, you know, the talk of the next presidential debate on Sunday.
And it's not like there's not material that Trump could exploit on Hillary. You know, if he could
plenty of stuff.
If that he could get out of his own head.
Republicans were like, during that whole debate, you know, you're getting notes from Republicans saying, when's he going to bring up the emails? When's he going to bring out pay for play in the Clinton Foundation?
Right.
When's he going to bring these things up? And he just failed to. So that's part of the reason why Hillary Clinton was such a clear winner, because, you know, she prosecuted the case and she made her case. Donald Trump ended up largely on the defensive. He needs to change that if he wants to change the trajectory of this race, because you see these polls coming out post that first debate, Hillary Clinton taking leads in a lot of the battleground states that Donald Trump needs to win in order to get to the White House, guys.
Chris Freitz, nice enough to give us time weekly on Wednesdays. We appreciate it, and doing a great job on CNN. Just put in Freitz in all your social media situations, including his MySpace page and his Friendster page, and you'll be able to find him. Thanks, bud.
Hey, thanks, guys.
Thanks, Chris.
It's traffic. You know, we like Fred.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Nine 11. Hi, Steve. It's final hour of the program, and Josh Gates is standing by. You know, an adventurer has never been a title that's been strapped to my back. And he's got a brand new mission to take on. Is Yeti real? I thought Yeti was one of our engineers.
He is.
Yeah, that's what I thought was the case. Josh joins us now. Good morning, Josh. How are you?
I'm great. How you guys doing?
Chasing Bigfoot?
Yeah, some version of him up in the Himalayas.
All right, so why do you think Bigfoot is in Nepal or Bhutan?
Well, it's not so much that I think he's there. It's that a lot of other people do. You know, this is a story.
That's where his Snapchat account is emanating from?
Yeah, exactly. This the Yeti, for people who aren't familiar with it, is what we would call the abominable snowman. It's really the Bigfoot of the Himalayas, except that it's a much older story. It's been kicking around up there for hundreds, if not thousands, of years. And people up there to this day are adamant that they have encounters with some sort of large, unidentified primate. And so what we're doing is basically trying to separate the facts from the folklore here and go up there and meet with eyewitnesses, talk to experts. There are scientists up there trying to collect genetic evidence for the world's first DNA study to try to determine if there could be something like the Yeti up there. And also visiting monasteries that claim to have purported Yeti artifacts, Yeti scalps, Yeti hands, and really trying to get what's real here and what is mythology.
This is all Travel Channel, right?
Yep, it's on Travel Channel Wednesdays at 9, 8 Central.
Yeah, so 8 o'clock tonight, our time, and you can go to travelchannel.com for more. Why interested in Bigfoot?
You know, I've always liked the story of the Yeti. I just thought it was a cool story. I love the idea of these, you know, climbers up there seeing, you know, some strange creature off in the snow. But I actually come to the story as an open-minded skeptic. I mean, I'm not a Bigfoot guy. I'm not a guy who says, yeah, this thing's definitely out there. We got to go find it. But I am intrigued by the fact that people, sane, rational people who are not trying to profit off this, who are not selling T-shirts, you know, have had encounters with something that they cannot understand. And so whether you believe in the Yeti, whether you are a skeptic, these people's stories are real. There is a real mystery there. Now, it could be misidentification. It could be, you know, folklore and religion sort of working on these people's minds. But there's some answer to this. And so I think for me, it's just a fascination with the story.
Every culture has something, sort of. You know, I mean, you got the Loch Ness Monster, you got the Chupacabra. Yeah. But Bigfoot seems to have lasted an exceptionally long time. We can't really write this off as an ugly tourist who got lost in the woods, can we?
No, we can't. And in fact, not only are there many different monsters out in the world, but there's many different Bigfoots out in the world. You know, many cultures have a Bigfoot. Along with the Yeti in the Himalayas, there's the Yeren in China, the Yowie in Australia. There's various creatures in Central and South America that would kind of, you know, fit this descriptor as well. So this is like a global phenomenon, and it's a really interesting question of why this story persists around the world as much as it has. And I think that, you know, look, we're now entering the age where everybody has a camera on them at all times. So I think that it's getting harder and harder, especially in North America with the Bigfoot. It's getting harder and harder to defend this idea that there's no good evidence of this thing. I mean, at a certain point, I think either some good photos and videos are going to start showing up, or we're going to have to really say, look, this is the stuff of legend.
Josh, has there ever been any thought to there could be more than one? Because this notion of, you know, one Yeti or one Bigfoot that kind of spans all these different
times. Well, yeah.
It's kind of funny, frequent flyer miles.
And through time, too, because it'd be an old Yeti now.
And look, I think that's a big part of this. I think if you look at, like, the like lake monster stories, like take Loch Ness, it's a perfect example. You really can never be talking about one of anything. You have to be talking about a breeding population. You have to be talking about something that can reproduce and continue to reproduce over time so that you have, you know, a species that can endure. And when you think about it that way, suddenly things like the Loch Ness Monster get a lot harder to justify because, you know, you need to have, I don't know what the breeding population is for a sea monster, or a lake monster. But for most animals, it's not just one or two or three. You have to have a pretty robust population. Having said that, it's like it's hard to say no to things. It's hard to prove the absence of something. And there have been real discoveries made in the last 5 years, even of primate species and of mammal species around the world. So it is possible that there are things out there. I think if you look at the Himalayas, there is a ton of wilderness that's never been explored, that's never been charted. And so that's an area where, yes, you could still have real discovery. But, yeah, you have to be talking about Yetis, you know, more than one.
Josh Gates, Travel Channel adventurer, again, 8 o'clock tonight. What's your favorite trip? What's your favorite thing you've done so far? Because I know you got a long list of stuff you plan on doing.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I've been so fortunate to travel around. I will say, not to plug the show, but I do have a real warmth for the Himalayas. I mean, I love the people there. I love the environment there is so difficult, and you know, just the geography is so challenging that I love traveling up into the mountains there. I'm also a huge fan of Southeast Asia. I love Vietnam, Cambodia, Thailand. So just in terms of personal travels, that's a place that I have a real affection for. I love the people, the food, the weather, the history of that region of the world is so fascinating.
I know you're married, right? A couple of years ago, is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
How do you meet a woman and go, yeah, listen, I'm going to be gone 95% of the time, and it's mostly going to be in the mountains?
You have to meet a very special woman who's also somewhat insane. yeah, it's you know, we just had a child, our first baby, who's almost 8 months old now, and that's made it a real challenge. You know, she's been amazing, and she, you know, it's a sort of like army spouse mentality, you know, of just sometimes we're able to bring her out on the trips and have her come out and into the field a little bit. But now that we have a baby, it's really it's hard to, you know, you have this amazing job, you get to see the world. And that's true. I would never argue that, but it does come at a cost. It is a lot of time living out of a suitcase.
Can you see a time? Because look, there's no instant love like having a kid. And if you get it as a dad, as soon as that child shows up, you go, whoa. Well, yeah. I had no idea. So can you see a time where you're going to have to slow down and back it off and maybe take exciting trips to the suburbs?
Totally. I mean, you know, for the very first time in my life, I really feel like I could give it all up. I could give up seeing the whole world. When you meet your kid, wow, it's such a potent thing. And for the very first time, I feel that. I would love to be able to kind of take him out into the world on these adventures. But, of course, I need to wait a few years for that. So, yeah, these next few years are going to be a real challenge.
By the way, your wife's hot. I wouldn't blow this because I think you're over your skis, even though you're Josh Gates.
she'll love that. Yeah. That's so great. She'll eat out on that for weeks.
Travel Channel tonight, 8 o'clock. You're always welcome here. Good luck, bud.
Hey, thanks, man. I appreciate it.
See you later. Back after this on 720 WGN.
Hug it, chug it, football.
It's wang dang doodle time. Oh, boy, not again.
Time for the Wang Dang Doodle. Remember, it's team care versus team don't care. Stunningly, the don't cares and the do cares are tied at two weekly wins apiece. The scoring came into a controversial sidebar last week when Dave Ennett, the head coach and captain of the do care team, went nuts on statistician Mary Sandberg Boyle.
Go Cats.
Married to Pat Boyle, Comcast Sportsnet. And complained about where the QBR rating came from. But I assume you two got a chance to get some counseling and you've settled all that?
First of all, I'd hardly say I went nuts. I have great respect for Mary.
I thought you lost it.
Went crazy.
It felt like an HR issue to me.
It was more like it.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. I still, though, haven't been provided with where this rating comes from.
I know. On the other hand, as captain of the don't cares, have stayed very reserved.
Yes.
Because she doesn't care.
Let's go live to your subconscious now. Are you enjoying the process of making the pick subconscious?
You know, if I was Mary, I probably would have filed a report. I mean, he really got angry, Dave. I mean, he was throwing stuff and
right. Out of control.
Then he spilled coffee everywhere. I had to clean it up. It was
You can't stand a spill, right?
Oh, sits there. It soaks in. The coffee smells up the whole room. It's cold down here, by the way. It's unbelievable.
That's Mary's subconscious, Mary Vanderbilt.
I didn't say any of that, by the way.
And it's dark.
All right, Sandberg, who picks first?
That's true.
Steve Cochran.
I'm going to go with a young quarterback named Tom Brady, who returns this week for the New England Patriots against the terrible Cleveland Browns. I'm going to go with New England and Cleveland in my scoring as well. I'm going to pick New England to win this 5-2. it's going to be a blowout. New England 35, Cleveland 6.
Mike, I would like you to isolate that for in case he's wrong because he's so confident.
I really am. Yeah, for, cocky would be the word.
For future.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
exactly
right.
You can put
exactly
that with
right.
You predicting Trump wouldn't be in the race.
That's and, right. That's right. Yeah, me predicting the Cubs would win 75 games last year. Yeah, I got it all figured out. Who's picking next?
Your lovely mother, Anne.
Is Mom on the phone?
She is.
Let's go to Mom.
Oh, God, big baby.
That's Mommy.
What an embarrassment. Embarrassment.
In a world of major market morning radio, one woman struck fear.
Big baby.
In the hearts of jovial radio talent.
Big baby.
It's Steve's mom.
Tina! Bring me the axe!
You've been warned.
That's my mommy! Hi, Mom. How are you?
Good morning, dear. You know, I'm not going to be sarcastic and pick on you today because I'm very worried about you.
Why is that?
Well, you did 15 minutes in depth on Dancing with the Stars, which it kind of concerns me a bit.
Yeah, you should, yeah.
And then you sang a silly little drinking song about beer cans, and you don't even drink.
No, not much.
You're really a little off the rails, I think.
You want me to sing the song again for you? Every beer is
don't
sacred. Okay, sorry. Sorry,
I'll
Mom.
Put you in the corner.
Sorry, Mom. All right, now did Sandberg tell Sandberg Boyle, wife of Pat Boyle, Comcast Sports, did she tell you that you won this whole thing 2 weeks ago?
No, I knew that.
Oh, you didn't.
And
know.
Then
okay.
I slept through the show last Tuesday, not knowing that we were going to do picks early. So I had to take the last choice, and that's where it all gets screwed up because you might know what you're doing,
right?
But if you're the last choice, you only got a prayer.
Now you know that I know you were on with Eric and Kathy. You know that, right? And I mean, that's. I mean, you say you slept through the show, but we know where you really were.
I'm getting an award from them.
Okay, all right. So make your pick. Who's your quarterback?
My quarterback will be Matt Ryan.
Matt Ryan, Atlanta Falcons. And your game you'll score?
And my game will be Denver over Atlanta, 27-21.
Wow, it's a good game. See, she's really good, man. She pays
she's
attention
on it.
To football.
I know. She should be our captain.
Did you hear my prediction that New England will win 5 million to 2?
I did. And that's why I say, you just, there's something a little wrong with you today.
Yeah, you know what?
Well, I can't. Most days, actually.
Yeah, I can't argue with it. Who's next?
Andrea. All right, I was going to pick Tom Brady, but I am going to go with Aaron Rodgers, even though I can't stand the Packers.
Aaron Rodgers, Green Bay Packers. You know, his family doesn't talk to him.
Really?
Yeah.
I can see why.
He doesn't talk to his family.
He's a Packer.
Yeah. Go ahead, game. You watch The Bachelorette.
Wait, my game is Bears game. I'm going to pick the Colts over the Bears, 24-17.
Colts, have the Colts won yet, Dave?
Yes, they have one win.
Yeah. So this is a battle of the 1-3s?
Mm-hmm. 1-3s. There's a bunch of those this week.
Oh, you can cut the tension with a knife.
Who's our backup?
Hoyer.
Yeah. Jed Hoyer? Yeah.
Jed Hoyer, yes. Jed Hoyer, Cubs president, is our backup quarterback.
Mr. Dave Ennett?
My quarterback will be Derek Carr. My game will
Derek Carr's no longer in the league.
My game will be... Yeah, he probably has a negative QBR for this week's game, even though they haven't even played it yet.
Yes.
According to Mary.
Yes.
And Minnesota 24, Houston 13.
Minnesota 24.
13. And Houston, Jake 13. Obviously was going to take David Carr based on the noise he let out just
or
now.
Derek.
Or Derek Carr, sorry.
Yeah, I had Brady and then Derek Carr, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You
two of my
play?
Games got picked, too. It's a rough morning.
Is that Mary or is that
sounding like me.
Mike.
Yeah, Mike, what's up with you?
You started to take the character a little too seriously.
And I'll tell you, this Dancing with the Stars last night took to...
It did take
I mean,
a long time.
You know, just get it done. Vanilla Ice, we knew he was going to lose.
What?
All right, who's your quarterback?
Jeez. I'm going to go with Andrew Luck.
Okay.
And then my game will be the Carolina-Tampa Bay game, Panthers 31-14.
31-14.
I love it. I love our team.
All right.
We're back
in the game. And we are out of time to pick the don't care team. Looking ahead here.
Okay, my choices are.
Special announcement at 9:40. Let's see if we can get Vanderbilt's team in, say, at 9:58 or 9.
Oh, gee, thanks.
But we'll try to squeeze it in at the end of the show. All right, Sandberg, you got all the Duke hair picks?
I got the Duke hairs.
Well, that's what matters. We'll come back with the big story next. Thanks, Mom.
Oh, she already hung up.
She's already
on the next show.
Mom's got other show call waiting. It's 9:30. Back after this on 720 WGN.
This is unbelievable.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio.
WGN Chicago.
720 WGN.
9:40 and Bill and Wendy at 10. We're going to try to get in the Wang Dang Doodle picks for the Don't Care team. I don't like their chances, but we'll see if we can get that in before
we better get them in.
10 o'clock.
I don't think so.
So I'm, you know, like, I'm minding my own business. I'm not hurting anybody. I open a little thing called the internets. I opened up the internets this morning, and there in Rob Feeder's, Rob Feeder does a wonderful job of covering the media. And there in Robert Feeder, I'm sorry, young man?
I didn't even make the big story.
Robert Feeder.
I know I was going to make you the big story.
Wow. Robert Feeder's
talk
headline.
Talk about the little story.
It was a different hurricane.
The voice you hear, Jimmy DeCastro leaving WGN radio, quote, "I've done everything I can." You know what's funny about that quote?
Yes.
I've done everything I can. I tried.
Hey, first, thanks, Rob Feeder, for a wonderful article.
It is a nice story. Yeah.
And Rob has been a great advocate of many of the changes in the last 3 or 4 years, silently here to help us and give us some guidance. Listen, as you have, Mr. Cochran, so
right.
A big thank you to you.
I'm going to say something to you before anybody else talks here.
No, actually, I want to talk first. Go Hawks. How about the Hawks last night?
Yeah. See, this
was that unbelievable?
Here he goes.
The young players playing. I had a chance to spend some time with Mr. John McDonough and Jay Blunk yesterday.
Uh-huh.
Even Pete busted in the room, the new vice president, you know.
Yeah.
And they're so excited about the team, and watching them yesterday was absolutely fantastic. And
it's going to be a great season.
You got to feel great.
But let me know if you need tickets.
Yeah,
right. So
while I have the show, Steve.
Here's the thing. Because I've known you for a long time, and I know the one thing that makes you more uncomfortable than anything is when people compliment you. So I've assembled a group of your friends and people that have worked for you, along with the people that love you on the show, just to say a couple of things. By the way, this is just stage one. As we work our way through the month towards your final day, we're all going to be doing tributes that make you so uncomfortable. You'll probably end up in a home.
No, yeah. That's not true.
But allow me to say the following. And by the way, I'm not asking permission. I'm going to do it anyway. You deserve unending thank yous. Not just from us, but from this audience and other people. And anybody that knows me knows I don't say this about management ever. But for coming back to this radio station at a time where you didn't need to, for coming back and rebuilding this place at a time where it was on life support, which was no fault of the people that were working here, which was directly related to the people that ran it into the ground previously, for loving it and rebuilding it, hiring the right people, sweating the details, and doing all the things you'd done a million times before. There's no way we can thank you enough. I thank you for a restart in my career. I thank you because, aside from valuing your friendship, you're the smartest guy I've ever met in the media business. And I believe in this radio station as a Chicago institution, in the way the Blackhawks are an institution, and so many other things in this town. Channel 9 are institutions as well. It's important to the audience. It's important to the city. And you... you're the guy that you're the straw that stirred the drink, Reggie. And I love you, and I thank you for being here. And you deserve to leave if you want, even though right now, currently, I hate you.
Yeah, we
well,
second
that's
that.
Very sweet of you to say. Now, may I say something?
Yeah, I suppose. Go ahead.
Okay, good. This has been one of the most wonderful experiences of my life, and I just was up talking to the sales department and a bunch of the staff, and I pulled out a folder that I had asked everybody in the very beginning on what they wanted us to do, and started reading through them, and to the letter of every single thing, we were able to accomplish it. And we truthfully accomplished it together. But the amazing part about this place is the glow that I get when I see you. The glow that I get when I take out the broom and I dust off the Walk of Fame. First Dave, but everybody
By the else, way, his idea, the Walk of Fame.
Who I'm so proud of. And the glow that I get when Northwestern's helmets come running out, even though I could do with a little less of the roar and the stadium of the cat, rawr, but Jim would shoot me for that.
I'll
and
pass
Mike.
That along.
But
he can't help but manage.
The glow of the Star Spangled Banner at the Blackhawks game.
Right.
The glow at every single sales outing and sales meeting and call that the sellers are going out on that are representing me and us. The glow of the Pride Parade and the glow of all of the pictures and the amazing costumes and things that we look at and go. The glow at the interviews and the talent. We were yesterday at Paul Green's funeral and to see how our station has impacted so many people.
Right.
You talked about it beautifully on the air today. You know, Steve, that you've been an integral part, as has Jeff Hill and Jackie Paulus, Director of Sales and Marketing. They're both here with me. And you got us to bring in Todd Manley, the Gozar, the gamekeeper.
Yeah, I want to apologize for that.
Yeah, I know. You do owe me for that. But it all starts in the morning show, and I'm not just repeating back a compliment. Truthfully, the glow of this place and what you get about it, and I've been around the business a long, long time. I am blowing up like a wood tick on Twitter, and I'm not sure what that means. Jackie, what does that mean? they fire me.
Right, what are they going to do now?
I can't get fired. Well, Andrea was about to cry.
Well, I was about to cry.
So now she's not. Now she just wet her pants.
Now I'm crying for
a different
reason.
She just wet her pants. So
I didn't plan on a deposition for the FCC at your going away party.
Oh, boy. No, truthfully, and there's one final thing, and this is to the audience, to the listeners. Every place that I go to a remote broadcast in Naperville, or I go to one of the Allstate broadcasts, and I see these listeners, and I watch them walk up, and I watch the impact that that audience has on this radio station. And I've been around amazing radio stations and television stations, but the impact that this has, it truly is Chicago's very own. It truly is a amazing place, and it is a family. So I am part of the family. I am always going to be part of the family, and I will always be there for you. So thank you.
Well, thank you. And I will now, for up to 90 seconds, allow anyone else in the room to speak, much like moderating last night's debate.
I want to say, well, we all love you. We think you're the greatest boss. I'm not going to cry. You're a gentleman. You're an advocate. You're generous. And you make us better journalists, better broadcasters, and better people. And you're a friend. And we love you. And please don't go. Please stay.
Oh, boy.
Please? That How ship. About a whole pack of gum I'm going to chew unless you stay?
Actually,
baby.
That ship has sailed with the filthy-mouthed pirate as the captain. Dave?
Well, I think it's about leaving a place better than you found it, and I don't think there's any question that this is a much better place today than it was the day you walked in the door, and it's been a wonderful place for, I can speak about 30-some-odd years that I've off and on that I've been part of it. And I knew it was going to be different when I was encouraged to dress up like Little Red Riding Hood on Halloween, and Jimmy was the number one advocate of that whole idea.
And it was a hot look for you.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It's just been wonderful. And we'll miss you.
For Jeff Hill and Jackie and Andre and Dave as well, the people that were here and can speak to the change in the hallways and the change in the attitude and the change in all of it and the faith put towards people to be able to do what they needed to do and maximize them. I think one of the best things you do as a manager, and again, I am almost thrown up in my mouth. I've never said this many nice things about management in my life. But the best thing you do as a manager is hire good people and encourage them to do the work and get out of their way and just make them be as good as they can be. And Jeff Hill is running a sales department that has record numbers, that continues to put up unbelievable numbers. So a hand for Jeff, Jackie, and everybody in the promotions department and marketing doing amazing things. And my friend for life, Todd Manley, who was once my producer and is now ready to throw me out. Todd, when you met Jimmy for the first time, you know, he's a little bit like a hurricane.
He's a force of nature.
He's a force of nature.
Yeah, absolutely.
But he hears everything you say. It sticks to him, and he acts on it. Doesn't always agree with you, but he makes it a pleasure to come to work. And, you know, we're going to miss that. We really are.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about it, people, there's legend, you know, I mean, obviously, of what he's brought to places. I've told people, you know, whatever you heard was the legend, multiply it by 500. And I think that, you know, what he's taught us to do is just sort of break eggs, you know.
Have fun again.
And so I think that today we're sort of, even though he didn't ask for it, we're giving him permission to go break some new eggs.
Yeah.
And thanks for giving us permission to fail so we can win.
And I have one question for you, because you've done it all. You've run major companies, you've run little companies, but you've also run some of the great radio stations of all time. So I'll put you on the spot. I know how much the Loop means to you, and I had the pleasure of working there briefly. But Johnny and Dahl and Meyer and all these guys, when they were at their best, they worked for you at one point or another. But I think I'm right about this. I don't want to put words in your mouth. But where does this rank just in fun and satisfaction for you in running this radio station?
It's a great question. It's hard to, you know, pick one versus the other because I had so many incredible experiences. The Loop and being in Chicago at a young age, at a time when, you know, we were in the tour bus, we were in the front of the bus, and the talent that was amassed on that radio station is very similar to a different generation than the talent that's amassed at 720. I wasn't a big 720 listener. I said for Jerry Wells, who was a big part of this, and Annie DiCastro, we're P1s of the station. We absolutely love Lou Manfredini and Orion Samuelson and Kaufman and Ro Khan and Anna and Bill and Wendy and Nick DiGiulio and on and on and on and on. I go through the news department. I'm so proud walking through that news department with Andre and Judy and Bertrand and watching them grow and the entire staff, Steve Grzanich and everybody. It's an unusual place, as was L.A. and as was New York in unique periods of time for my life. The difference for me this time is this has been absolutely collaborative. We were a little more in the dark in those last opportunities. Everybody in this room was involved in every decision that we have made. Jeff, Jackie, Todd, and I put our names on it, but we've counseled you, we've counseled everybody. You know your involvement has been deep, and as has everybody else.
I'll deny that in court.
And it keeps getting better. Our motto has always been to honor our legends and past, which we do beautifully, but to make it better every single day while we're building the new world, the new media. And that's what this place is about. And at my age now, the enjoyment of being around you and watching you succeed, a really great leader, and actually McDonough and I talked about this yesterday, steps aside when there's a time you can leave light and you can let great leaders into that light and watch them grow and build.
Amen.
That is the single best thing in my career that has ever happened. Watching incredible staff of people take over and do better than you could possibly think that they could do. It is amazing, and I know there's only great, great things for 720 WGN.
Thanks, buddy. Jimmy DiCastro. He'll be around for another few weeks. We will be stealing stuff from his office. And I don't want to scare you, but if you look behind you, the guy that could still throw you out here for another 3 weeks.
Can we please thank Larry J. Wirt. Look at this guy. How unbelievable. Come in here. We've got to have Larry in here because Larry's a really big part of this.
Come in. We'll take a team picture.
Yeah. Larry and by the way, we thought we'd do maybe Halloween as the final day, like a half day, Larry, on Halloween for everybody.
Yeah, fine. Do whatever you want.
No problem.
Oh, my gosh.
Didn't he just say yes?
Yeah, he said yes. He's talking to someone outside on Michigan Avenue.
He agreed.
Half day Halloween. Everybody in costumes, Dave.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I got it.
He dressed up as the Pope last year.
Love you.